Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Wednesday, April 23rd, 2025. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. 31 University of Idaho employees got notices of potential termination after federal government pulled UI's largest grant ever last week, a $57 million grant, which includes subsidies to farmers. We'll have details on that, plus an interview. Washington Senate passes three tax revenue bills to help address the $15 billion budget deficit for the state. And Teresa Borenpohl files $5 million civil complaint against Kootenai County Sheriff Bob Norris and private security firm Lear Asset Management after plainclothes agents dragged her out of a Kootenai County Republican Party Central Committee meeting in the Coeur d'Alene High School in February. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. The University of Idaho sent notices of termination to at least 31 UI employees last week after the U.S. Department of Agriculture pulled funding for the largest grant in UI history, the $59 million Innovative Agriculture and Marketing Partnership Project. The emails to the UI employees last week said, "Today we received notice that our USDA Innovative Agriculture and Marketing Partnership grant has been terminated by the new federal administration. As this grant is your primary source of funding, we must ask you to cease work on the project immediately. Classified and exempt employees will receive a termination notice once they have been completed by human resources in the next few days. We know this is an awful turn of events, and believe me, we share in your distress and disappointment. We are very sorry. Stay tuned for more updates. But for now, do not work on any innovative agriculture and marketing partnership-related projects." The ongoing project included UI faculty, staff, and graduate students providing technical support to producers to collect and analyze data. The USDA said it is implementing new criteria to evaluate climate smart grants. The new criteria includes a provision that at least 65% of the grant funds must go directly to producers. The UI said in a statement issued Wednesday of last week, it has been allocating more than 50% of the funding as direct incentive payments to producers, with the rest of the grant excluding direct administrative costs. It intended to provide technical and marketing services to enrolled producers, saving them the cost of contracting those services independently. Although the co-director of the project, Professor Sanford Eigenbrody, said last week the UI could reapply for the grant under the new guidelines in the future, Soil and Water Systems Associate Professor and Research Faculty Member Zach Kaler said the impact of the withdrawal of research funds will be devastating for the university and that it's unlikely some of the terminated employees will stick around to become part of any continuing research team, if it even happens. I spoke to Zach Kaler this afternoon.
So the application was put in several years ago. We were awarded the funding, and this type of program had never been implemented before or tried before. It was really unique. The amount of money, even where it was coming from, was special. And many people applied for it. The University of Idaho was unique in that it focused on the state itself rather than a whole region or a specific commodity. And I think one of the key aspects of it was including tribal members, tribes, and also underrepresented farmer groups in Idaho.
That was key to getting the grant for the University of Idaho. Other universities also got these sorts of grants as well around the country.
Yes, universities, also industry partners with the universities, to state departments of ag across the board. They were just huge consortiums of institutes that came together. Some were awarded in excess of $80 million. Ours was cut down from $80 million down to the amount you reported.
Was it funded through Biden's Anti-Inflation Act?
The Inflation Reduction Act, yes.
Right, okay. All right, so the USDA says it is now implementing new criteria to collect and analyze data for the Climate Smart Commodities Program grant program, and the UI can reapply. How likely is this that we'd get a chance to reapply in the age of DOGE?
Well, I mean, this is tough. We're all kind of thrown into a pit with no knowledge of what the requirements are. We just know based on the press release that was sent to everyone why it was terminated. So the whole project was just stopped, and we will be reapplying to a different type of program. It won't be called Climate Smart Commodities. It'll be called something else entirely, no doubt. But there is an emphasis on the amount of dollars going to the farmers, the growers, and that's understandable. And they are also prioritizing the marketing. So how we are able to translate some of the regenerative practices in the commodities so that, you know, you go out and you buy your not climate smart beer, but your Idaho beer that's been grown with regenerative practices, or your pea and wheat flour, the high protein that has been grown through this project. So, you know, how you often see maybe an organic sign on your vegetables or your other products, this would be a different type of marketing for that. So, but usually it takes several months to put something like this together. I believe we're going to have something on the order of 3 to 4 weeks to reapply with very little information. And there are internal deadlines that need to be met, and the university can be a very slow beast to move.
And what do you know about them taking the words climate smart out of the name of the grants? I mean, obviously, it sort of rings, seems to relate to the Trump administration's climate denial and not wanting anything to do with climate. And yet, I guess there's, you know, things like regenerative agriculture that maybe you can sort of distance from climate, although not too much that goes on the planet really can be.
Yeah, I totally agree that climate smart, you know, what were you before? Climate dumb. So the naming, the terminology we have to use going forward has to align with, politically, like the research call, like what their mission is. But there's no denying that there are overlaps in conceptually between climate smart and regenerative ag, resilience, and, you know, just growers wanting to make sure that they are able to sustain their way of life into the future. And you can't do that without recognizing that there's more drought, there's more pests, there's just an increase that things are changing, and some of them are unprecedented.
Okay, the big question I want to get to is, you were saying people are losing their jobs at the University of Idaho because of the suspension and or termination of the Climate Smart Commodities Program grants. What is happening with people who have jobs? Are some people hanging on and doing other stuff, or are these people just out the door right now?
Yeah, no, this is the hardest part of the whole process is, you know, that the press release came out, the word came down that we have to stop. And for 2 or 3 nights straight, it was just watching termination email come in, only because I was CC'd on a lot of them with people I worked with. Stop what you're doing. You cannot work anymore. There is no more funding. Don't show up tomorrow. Every 10 minutes, a new email would come up, and you just kind of understand the impact at a personal level, like what was going on. And so there were a number of people where their funding was stopped, and the next day administrators would contact us and say, okay, look, the funding is no longer there. Give us another line of funding so that these people are paid. And this was being asked of, you know, associate professors or research individuals, and it wasn't being asked of maybe people that might actually have resources or feel some responsibility that might be higher up the chain of the hierarchy. It's like, well, it seemed like a larger problem that maybe the university could have come together and tried to find a solution. But it was just being dropped on the faculty of saying, okay, you have this problem, now find it. And that's what we did. So when it comes down to it, we pulled our resources together and said, okay, look, we have this grant that has a little bit of time left on it. This person is going to have to go, but at least we can give them a few months to find another job. And some of them were undergrads just working work study or temporary help, and sometimes we couldn't help them. And it might not seem like a lot, but I think to each and every one, it was a surprise and negatively impact their life.
So because of the cancellation or suspension of this grant, what's your estimate of the number of University of Idaho employees who have lost their jobs or will imminently lose their jobs?
Well, I mean, there has been a lot of effort to retain students. That has been the highest priority. So what it comes more difficult is staff, project managers, postdocs. Many of them have lost their jobs, and so that's going to be probably 10 to 15 that just, 15 at its most, that can't return because there is no funding.
As of today?
As far as I know. I mean, yeah. I'm not seeing all of the details, but I do know many of them might be having to go across the country now since they lost their visa that was tied to the position. So,
and the university isn't making a statement about this, I guess possibly because they, the chips haven't finished falling yet.
I think the university response, I can say this as somebody who doesn't have a lot of responsibility I don't know how to put this, but I don't have to worry about some of the political repercussions, but they are in many ways making sure to protect their asses going forward, like making sure that, yeah, we can reapply. There hasn't been a strong statement. There hasn't been an ask from university council to challenge this. They're just, I feel like there could have been many avenues the university could have taken, but they've taken a more conservative route for reasons I don't know. There could be very good reasons, but it's a little bit disappointing that there hasn't been a response from the leadership to level with us and to say, yeah, this is awful. And I think for the largest grant that's ever been awarded to the university, we should have somebody down there saying, we're pulling for you. This is awful, and we want to take care of our people. And to some extent, that has happened, but at the much within the college level itself. And so the college has done its best to try to just mitigate this horrible circumstance.
Okay, and the people who are out the door now, do you think that they are going to want to wait around to see if the university applies with these different standards? Or, you probably don't know, but I mean, it probably varies from case to case. But I guess what I'm getting at is, like, what the level of bureaucracy and the timeline would be for reapplying for to get these positions back.
Yeah, no, it's too slow. The people need to pay rent and move on with their lives. There are some, people in Idaho are resilient, and they just kind of say, I'm going to find what I can, and if the opportunity comes up, I'm going to apply again. And they put on a very strong position, a stance, while others are just saying, this is the last straw for being in Idaho. I feel like it really doesn't want me here, whether it's some of the policies that happen at the state level or even at the university and their position. It's just, they really feel like, there are other places that want me around.
And by taking Climate Smart out of the program name and possibly changing how do you think that may change how the research is done, to the extent where somebody who might reapply might say, well, this is too different, this isn't my specialty now?
Yeah, I think it remains to be seen if research will even be included in the grant, if it's, especially in the way that we had it before, a little bit more systematic. It could be that so much needs to go to the growers that it basically becomes, we're watching how their crops grow and making sure the risk is low, and that's very valuable. We want to build and maintain our trust with the growers of Idaho. But at the same time, the opportunity to have impactful research along these lines of climate smart, or if you want to call it resiliency or sustainability, those impacts are going to be weakened for sure. And the whole climate smart aspect of it, that was a decision, especially in what we call the IAMP project. And I'm going to
say that project again.
The IAMP, it stands for Innovative Agriculture and Marketing Partnership, which almost reflects exactly the new title of what they want in the administration.
Right.
But the partners, you have to realize it's not just the university. There are many partners across Idaho that work together to put this whole partnership together. And they said they wanted Climate Smart out of the name because it would not be very compelling to the culture in Idaho. I guess in hindsight, it was somewhat wise, because with the new administration coming in, I'm sure we might not have even gotten an invitation to reapply if we still had Climate Smart in the name. But I think we just have to talk about it in a different way now. And you weaken the message about Climate Smart, but at the same time, you can still pursue some of the outcomes that we want to see across the agricultural lands in Idaho, for beef, wheat, sugar beets, everything. Quite a number of important crops across Idaho, millions of dollars.
Okay, and finally, I just want to read from the previous story. The new criteria includes a provision that at least 65% of the grant funds go directly to producers. The UI said in a statement that it has been allocating more than 50% of the funding as direct incentive payments to producers, with the rest of the grant. So, but apparently that wasn't enough.
No, that is only part of the, the value that these the enrollees were receiving. I mean, we would go out and sample the soil. We analyze the soil. We analyze their the nutrients of their crops. And this was to offset costs that would have come from their own, the grower's budget. So if, in that calculus, it really seems like we took some of the risk from those farmers and absorbed it, but we were just, we didn't present it as, yeah, this is a payment that we're giving you. It was just kind of like, we're going to make sure this is really easy for you. And if that makes sense.
Yeah. Anything you'd like to add?
I mean, it has been a shock to the university. It has been a shock to our program. And I think people need to realize the value of what the university brings to not only agriculture, but especially agriculture to the state. We honestly worked very hard so that the growers and the participants were protected. We wanted to be honest with our greenhouse gas reporting. We were not interested in greenwashing. We wanted to really show that this could work. And the students, the postdocs, all the scholars, this was the mission behind it, and people were highly motivated to really try something that across the state that we could never have done otherwise. It was just a huge opportunity, and to have the rug pulled out from underneath your feet like that was just, it's no other word but devastating.
That was University of Idaho Soil and Water Systems Associate Professor and Research Faculty Member Zach Kaler speaking with KRFP this afternoon. Innovative Agriculture and Marketing Partnership Project Co-Director Sanford Eigenbrody said last week, "While we are disappointed by the USDA decision to terminate the Innovative Agriculture and Marketing Partnership Project grant, we are thankful for the opportunity to resubmit our proposal. The objectives of the Innovative Agriculture and Marketing Partnership Project are in line with the expected guidelines from USDA and the Natural Resources Conservation Service and their Farmer First priorities, and we are in a good position to reconfigure the project to meet those guidelines." Washington Governor Bob Ferguson has signed a new law preventing state militias from coming to Washington without approval from the governor or the president. When he signed the law yesterday, Ferguson said, "State autonomy is the foundation of our federalist system. This bill is a simple but very important expression of that system." Ferguson said the new law will not impact disaster responses that come out of interstate mutual aid agreements. The legislation has an emergency clause, which means it went into effect immediately after the governor signed it. Ferguson said, "We just cannot allow as a state to have armed forces come into our home and enforce policies that are against our core values." Republican governors in recent years have been sending National Guard troops to border states to assist in an effort to stop unauthorized immigrants from making it across the border. South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem sent 60 National Guard troops to states along the southern border last year. The Spokesman Review reports at least 7 other states have similar laws as the one Ferguson signed. Ferguson said his law is modeled after a law currently on the books in Idaho. The governor said, "We welcome collaboration with National Guard forces when warranted, but only with our permission." Governor Bob Ferguson has signed a new law prohibiting putting medical debt information on people's credit reports. When it goes into effect July 27th, Senate Bill 5480 from Democratic Senator Marcus Richelli of Spokane will prohibit collection agencies from reporting overdue medical debt to credit agencies. The Washington State Standard reports spiraling medical debt can cause banks and other financial institutions to deny loans for cars and homes, and medical debt can cause providers to deny services to patients with outstanding bills. With less than a week until the Washington legislature is scheduled to adjourn in the shadow of a four-year, $15 billion budget deficit, the Senate has passed three tax bills and sent them to the House. The first bill expands the reach of the state sales tax to include software development and other information technology services. This would increase state revenue by $4.7 billion over 4 years. The bill would also expand the state tobacco tax to cover nicotine pouches. The second bill would raise the capital gains tax on assets over $1 million, increasing revenue by $561 million over 4 years. It would also increase the state's estate tax. The third bill would eliminate tax exemptions that legislators like Democratic Senator Jesse Solomon of Shoreline describe as legally obsolete, or where the public policy objective was not met. This would include the International Business and Occupation Tax Credit and the Dentistry Prepayment Insurance Premiums Tax Exemption. The Joint Legislative Audit and Review Committee previously identified those and other tax exemptions that are now on the chopping block. Senate Republicans were all opposed to all three bills, with a smattering of Democrats joining their caucus in opposition. State Republican Budget Committee member Chris Gildon of Puyallup, who is the ranking Republican on the committee, said the three bills, quote, are just part of the Democrats' effort to impose the largest tax increase in state history on the people of Washington. Senate Republicans proposed a budget Saturday that they say would preserve essential services without any new taxes, but their budget did not get any traction. Washington Governor Bob Ferguson has indicated he would not support a cuts-only budget, including the $3 billion in budget cuts proposed by former Governor Jay Inslee. Ferguson has proposed a total of about $7 billion in cuts over a four-year window. To bridge the $8 billion gap left between those cuts and the looming $15 billion deficit, Ferguson has also indicated he would not support an all-taxes approach either, which cast doubt on whether the Senate Democrats' three bills will get the support of the governor. Assuming the governor signs the three bills into law, there would still be at least a $2.5 billion gap between the cuts plus revenues and a balanced budget. The legislature faces a Sunday deadline to adopt a budget to avoid a special session. And you're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. Teresa Borenpohl filed a $5 million lawsuit Monday in Kootenai County Court against Kootenai County Sheriff Bob Norris, Lear Asset Management, and others who were at a Kootenai County Republican Party Central Committee town hall in February and who participated in dragging her out of the meeting. The February 22nd meeting at the Coeur d'Alene High School was open to the public. Sheriff Norris directed unidentified men in black jackets to remove Borenpohl for jeering at an onstage Republican and the event's MC in what Borenpohl describes as a physically painful and personally humiliating violation of her First Amendment right to free speech. Public records identify the men as Paul Truett, Alexander Truett, Christopher Berg, Russell Dunn, and Jesse Jones, who, at the recommendation of the Coeur d'Alene Police Department, were charged with battery and false imprisonment. Lear Asset Management, the California-based private security company for whom the five men worked, was stripped of their security license in Coeur d'Alene. Company owner Paul Truett lives in Hayden, Idaho. The Coeur d'Alene Police Department and city prosecutor have not considered Sheriff Norris a suspect. Cell phone video shows Norris grabbing Borenpohl by the arm, attempting to remove her from her chair, threatening her with pepper spray, and stepping back and directing the five men from Lear Asset Management to grab and drag Borenpohl away. Borenpohl's lawsuit says, quote, Her clothing was damaged, and she was intentionally and willfully manhandled in a manner that harmed her dignity and reputation, causing her personal humiliation. Ms. Borenpohl was terrified from the time the unidentified men approached her at Sheriff Norris's direction, and each act of Sheriff Norris, the unidentified men, and the others in the crowd encouraging their actions increased her fear. In addition to Norris and Lear, Borenpohl has named Kootenai County Republican Party Central Committee Chair Brent Regan and meeting MC Ed Baharana in the lawsuit as defendants.
Montana officials have denied a petition asking the state to designate the Big Hole River as impaired by pollution. Two conservation groups collected data over 5 years and found levels of nutrients in the Big Hole River exceeded thresholds in some parts by two or threefold that could harm aquatic habitats, contaminate drinking water, and affect fishing and other tourism business. The Montana Department of Environmental Quality, or DEQ, said petitioners used the wrong metrics. Executive Director of Upper Missouri Waterkeeper Guy Alsenser says it's an example of politics undermining good science.
So at minimum, we feel that the state owes us a written explanation with some detail about exactly why it believes it can deny a petition that has clearly satisfied the scientific basis for developing a pollution cleanup plan.
The Montana DEQ argues that the petition's data doesn't abide by a state law passed in 2021. The Federal Environmental Protection Agency, however, officially disapproved of that law. Alsenser says he's requested that the EPA weigh in. Alsenser adds once high nutrient levels are proven, it's up to the DEQ to determine the causes.
In the case of most Montana rivers, it's going to be a combination of human land use patterns. Sometimes it's subdivisions, sometimes it's septics, sometimes it's a municipality, and sometimes it's farm fields or big cattle feeding lots.
Alsenser says keeping waterways healthy is both good common sense and good economics. According to the Bureau of Business and Economic Research, Beaverhead County's hunting and angling economy adds an estimated $74 million to area households annually and $167 million to businesses and organizations.
And that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather forecast from the National Weather Service, it'll be mostly clear through Friday with a low of 36 degrees tonight, highs 67 tomorrow and 70 on Friday, low 43 Thursday night, mostly cloudy Friday night, low 46, and a 20% chance of showers Saturday, mostly sunny, high 68. Currently 57 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business supports community radio. You can adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option and a Patreon button as well. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. David Katz assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. Flashpoints is up next, followed by an archive edition of Lockdown Mosh Pit on at 7:30. And at 8:30, music begins in earnest with Grateful Dead Through the Decades, featuring Arlene as your DJ. And at 10 o'clock on the air live also is Sounds of the Future. Stay tuned for more. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored by listeners like you and by Palouse Prairie Charter School, an EL Education accredited expeditionary learning model school serving students in northern Idaho. PPCS is a free public charter school that combines hands-on learning, rigorous academics, outdoor adventure, and character development. looseprairieschool.org. Programming on KRFP is also sponsored by Moscow Contemporary, which connects, supports, and creates community through art and arts education. Moscow Contemporary is located at 2012 West Pullman Road and moscowcontemporary.org.